Welcome to The Pen and the Yad. Rabbi Michael Siegel of Anshe Emet Synagogue in Chicago talks with author Jonathan Eig about this week's Torah portion of Shmini, overcoming our discomfort of death and responding to the morning.
What's your first memory of going to a Shiva house?
Oh, man, that's hard for me to remember, but I remember very strongly knowing when I was almost five that my grandfather died. So I'm guessing there was, you know, the gathering that I vaguely recall was sitting Shiva at my grandparents' house. And it was really mysterious to me at that age. You know, I didn't really understand what was going on. I didn't really understand even what death meant or where my grandfather had gone. And I was getting mixed signals from my family about, I think they weren't sure how much to tell me because he hadn't been sick. He was struck by a car and it happened very suddenly. And at one point, I remember my grandmother telling me he was ice skating and he fell through the ice. And I guess that she meant that in a way to like make it easier for me to understand. But it always terrified me of ice skating from that moment on. I think for kids especially, it's so hard to make sense of something like that. Someone's there and then they're not. So that's my earliest memory. And I'm guessing that memory of the ice skating story probably happened while we were sitting Shiva.
I remember going to my great-grandfather Shiva at my grandparents' house, and I remember distinctly, first of all, the smell of onions, right? The deli tray or whatever was there. And I remember the mirrors being covered and not understanding why that was, and kind of walking through the house and trying to understand why my grandmother was sitting on a low bench and things like that. I had no understanding of what was going on. But aside from that, I don't remember anybody actually talking to me about it or pulling me aside or preparing me. It's just sort of what you did, right?
Right, right. I think especially with children, we don't know what to say. But even for adults, we don't know what to say. It's a very awkward subject.
Right. And I've often thought about writing a book about the most foolish things I've ever heard said at a Shiva house.
right? Yeah, that would not be a popular book, I'm afraid, but maybe right. An interesting one.
You know, things like, well, she's in a better place now, or at least he didn't have to suffer, or it went fast, didn't it? You know, and on it goes. Or the supposedly helpful hints to the person. So you'll see, you'll feel better in a few months. Hey, let's talk about something else. Let's talk about the Cubs or whatever.
Right, right.
And so you kind of go through it. And what people are actually expressing, as you mentioned a moment ago, is their own discomfort with that moment. Like, what do I say? How do I say it? I don't want to say the wrong thing. That's a very real issue.
You have probably been to more funerals than certainly more than most. You know, you're in the elite 1% of people who've attended so many of these things. And I wonder if it's gotten easier for you over time.
Actually, it doesn't, actually. You know, for me, it's kind of a privilege to be part of a family at that moment. It's a privilege to kind of shape a eulogy and reflect on someone's life through the eyes of their loved ones. It's a privilege also to help families find their way, because oftentimes issues that are brewing in a family kind of rear their heads at moments like this. Or
sure.
It's also interesting to help families manage their memories. And what I mean by that is that you could have siblings sitting next to one another sharing memories of their mother or father, and you might think that they were talking about totally different people. Right. Their memories, their experiences of their parents can just be wildly different. And how do you acknowledge both and allow the other one to hear what the other one is saying and say, oh, that's not true, or that didn't happen that way. Oh, I don't remember her being like that. You know, those kinds of things, as opposed to just being able to hear someone else's experience. I think all of those things are really important. And I think that's a big part of what clergy do at a moment like that.
Yeah, what you're doing, it seems, is like that you're helping them focus on the life as opposed to, telling the story and remembering their role in your life, as opposed to just saying, oh, at least he didn't suffer, right? You're focusing on the person and not the death, right? And you're helping them to frame and understand that person's contributions, which is so valuable.
But it's easy to step into it, you know, step in it, to say the wrong thing or to kind of have to walk back something you've said at a funeral. It's hard to figure out exactly what the right thing is. And in fact, in this week's toll reading, you have a tragic death, the death of Nadav and Avihu in the portion of Shmini. Nadav and Avihu are two of the sons of Aaron. And on the eighth day of when the tabernacle was being dedicated, on this, the penultimate day of celebration, the Torah records that they burn a strange fire, Esh Zarah, which we assume to be a pagan ritual, maybe pagan incense, we're not sure. But whatever it is, they're burning into the Holy of Holies. God responds, and they die on the spot. So Aaron's sons are lying dead on this great day for the priesthood. And Moses doesn't hesitate to offer his thinking. And he says, "Bekarovai ekdesh, va'al pnei kol ha'am echved." And he says, "Through those near to me, I will show myself as holy and gain glory before all the people." Whatever Moses meant, and we can talk about that in the moment, how do you think Aaron felt? Do you think Aaron felt like saying, "That really helped me in this moment. Oh, I feel so much better"?
Yeah, not likely. You know, even if it were true, even if it were meant as a compliment, you know, the personal pain that he's feeling is going to overwhelm any kind of rational attempt to understand that, you know, well, maybe Moses is saying he had this greater responsibility because God had favored him. But how is that going to make you feel better about, you know, watching your sons die, at least in the moment, right? I just don't think rational explanations are going to cut it. That's my gut reaction.
Well, Sam, you're actually touching on something that Samson Raphael Hirsch said. He said, when you become a leader, right, God doesn't let things slip, doesn't look the other way. When you're a leader, you are standing in front of the people, you're setting an example, so you are to be judged that much more harshly. If you've put yourself in a position of leadership, then you need to know that more severe scrutiny goes with the territory. Even if that's what Moses meant, or maybe that they've become holy, God has taken them to them, to God's self. Like sometimes you hear God need another angel in heaven. You hear this among right. Christian friends, like, really, is that going to cut it for this person? Is that going to really be all that comforting? I think that God could have waited maybe for another mm-hmm. angel in heaven and not taken this child away from his mother or father. And Aaron's response in the moment says everything. The Torah says, "Vaidom Aharon," and Aaron was silent. So first of all, Aaron doesn't say, "Oh, thank you very much, Moses. That's very kind of you." Aaron is silent, and that silence is biting. But if you look at the term, and you'll remember from Hebrew school that when a teacher wanted you to be quiet, they would say, "Sheket bevakasha." Do you remember that?
That's the only thing I remember.
I think you and everybody else, right? And that is that's an ancient term, but the Torah doesn't use that term to describe Aaron. It says, "Vaidom Aharon." And another time when that phrase is used is when Joshua makes the sun stand still. It says, "Vaidom et ha-shemesh." And so it seems like the Torah's kind of assuming you might know that, and saying the kind of silence that Aaron is feeling is this burning, angry silence, right? Mm. And it's such a powerful moment where you think you're going to help someone, but you're really just trying to comfort yourself. You know, it's uncomfortable for me, so I'm going to say it's going to be all right. But you have no idea what this person's going through. You have to let them kind of sit with their pain and mourn and be with them. And that's why in our tradition, we have very specific rules and greetings for the mourner. We don't say, "Sorry," you can't say it. You don't say, "Well, he's in a better place," you can say it, but I'm not sure that that's going to have a lot of resonance. What we do say is the words, "Hamakom yinachem etchem betoch sha'ar avelei tzion v'Yerushalayim." It says, "May God comfort you along with the mourners of Zion, Yerushalayim, and throughout the world. And I want to point out to you, Jonathan, it says, Hamakom Yenachem. It's in the plural form. May God comfort you, plural. As if to say, there are all the mourners of Israel, right? They're all the people in this moment who are mourning someone we wish comfort to. And I'm wondering if you have any thoughts about why you think that's in the plural.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's for the same reason that we have a Shiva in the first place, is that maybe you're like Aaron, you know, you're not prepared to speak. You just want to withdraw and suffer alone, but you have this community around you. And maybe this is a way of reminding you that, you know, everybody suffers. Everyone goes through this at some point, and many people are going through it right now.
I think you're 100% right. I think that's exactly right. I think it's a reminder to the mourners that you're not alone. First of all, we're with you. You have a community here that's supporting you, but you're not alone in the world. Death is part of life. And other people are suffering just as you are on this day. You're part of a kind of a club, if you will, not one you want to join, but you're part of it. And I think that's such a powerful thing. But the other thing I want to point out is the word hamakom, when we say hamakom yenachem, it is a appellation for God. It's a name of God, but it's a really unusual name, the place. It really means Hamakom is the place. So what we're really saying is, may the place grant you comfort. Jews have as many names for God as Eskimos have names for snow. So why of all the names of God would they use that? And I want to remind you of a story that you know from Jacob. Remember, Jacob, when he leaves his home after cheating his brother out of his birth blessing, and having to run away from Esau, he goes to sleep at night in the middle of the wilderness. And he has nothing. He only has this pillow, a rock for a pillow. And he has that remarkable dream of the ladder, right? And the blessing that God is with you. And when Jacob wakes up, he said, God was in this place, and I didn't know it. And so in a way, that's the plight of the mourner, right? God is in this place, but he didn't know it. And what I want to suggest to you, Jonathan, is that what we're saying at a Shiva house is that when you go to sit with a person in mourning, you are, in a sense, becoming the place for God. Your voice becomes God's voice. Your hands become God's hands. And you are, you know, in a sense, a substitute for God in that place. And so the place itself helps to comfort those who are mourning.
Yeah, that's really nice. You know, it's interesting. I'm sure you've noticed this too, that one of the first things people do now when they lose a loved one is to write about them on social media, Facebook in particular. And you see this great response. And it's in some ways, it's very difficult to know what to do and how to respond, because it might feel superficial. It might feel like, you know, you're just hitting this automatic response, you know, sorry for your loss. My thoughts and prayers are with you. But it clearly has become a place where people find comfort in their own way. And I don't think it can ever substitute for being together in person. But for many people, it has to, especially during COVID. I think for people, it's been a place where people find some degree of comfort, at least. It seems to me that even in its own strange way, it fits in what you're saying.
There's no question. I think that is really one of the true upsides of social media, or moments like that, where people can talk about the death of a loved one, and lots of people may hear it or see it when, before the advent of social media, that just wouldn't have happened.
That's right.
But so in a sense, the place, if you will, may not be the Shiva house in the modern technological age, but it may be Facebook.
Yeah, and I guess you know, we have to make our places where we can. And especially for people who are not religious, maybe Facebook is doing a great service, because they don't have any other way to gather and to hear stories and to remember people in the same way.
I know. I think you're 100% right. I want to go back to Moses, because it's a reminder to us, as if we need them, that in the Bible, at least in the Hebrew Bible, our great ones are not perfect human beings. They're not saints. They make mistakes. And in this moment, Moses made an error. You know, he said the wrong thing at the wrong time. Now, I'm going to give credit to him and say that this is his brother, these are his nephews, and that he had only the best of intentions. But we learn a lesson about how to approach people by not being like Moses in this case. an understanding that sometimes you can't explain it. You can't make a person feel better. The only thing you can do is let them be there with them in their pain. So when we go to a Shiva house, there's a beautiful custom that traditionally what you would do is you would go and sit next to the mourner and not talk. It's an interesting thing. You would just not talk. And if the mourner wanted to talk to you, they would say something. But you would sit there for maybe 2 or 3 minutes. And if the mourner doesn't respond, you simply say to them, "Hamakom yinachem etchem b'toch sha'ar ve'leit Zion v'Yerushalayim," that phrase. And you've kind of done what you needed to do. I'm here. I'm present. We don't need to talk if you don't want to talk. I just want you to know that I care. I'm here. And I will continue to be here. And I think that that's a custom that we need to retain even in our connected technological age.
Yeah, that's really powerful. I like that.
Well, thank you, Jonathan.